Whenever you're up.
I mean, there's Brian, but really, like, what?
Okay, can we call the meeting to order? Is that okay? I don't want to interrupt. I know I'm late. I'm sorry I'm late. My son was playing baseball and I wanted to see him get up the last time, so I was like, all right, can we stand and do the pledge? We'll do that quick. Start doing it. Let's share a lap. You want to lead us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cool. Thank you, everybody, for coming. And Amanda and Ken, Kathy, thanks for coming. We'll just do the minutes quick. Did everybody, we got the phone, sent the minutes out. Everybody get to look at them. Any questions? Everybody okay with them? Okay. So, motion, Mary moves them. Let's hit a wrap, seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Cool. Carried 4-0. Okay. So, what we'll do is, Tim isn't here. Son has a band concert, so okay. So we'll let Ken and Amanda, if you don't mind.
Sure, we'll thanks, thanks, you guys. Happy to join you tonight. Again, we try to make it again. I know it's kind of nice on the new location out here. It's on my way home, but it's a lot of the way for Amanda. But I know that when the request came through, you wanted to talk about Emil Ashbore. So Amanda put together a little presentation to talk about what we've done and some of the technical assistance we provided to the towns. And then we also wanted to talk about a little bit about where we are with our two large solar installations.
Good, thanks.
And also give you some information on the electric cars. We took the liberty of the first ones on our fleet. We're having some results. We're going to share
good.
With you.
Good. So, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Good timing to talk about Emerald Ash Forest.
Just started.
You know, this has been an ongoing problem first detected, I think, around 2010 in Ulster County. And it's really, I think, I know I've been surprised, and I know a lot of other people have noticed that it's killing the ash trees fairly quickly, and they're showing signs of, like, very serious signs of decline even more rapidly than we had expected. So it was first identified in Saugerties area, and that still kind of remains like the epicenter or the hot spot for the county. But we're seeing it everywhere. So southern portions through the Catskills along the Hudson River. In 2013 and 14, we started working along with the County Department of Public Works, more considered way on ash. We, in 2016, finished a Ulster County Emerald Ash Borer Action Plan, where we actually had a summer intern who actually was had worked for the DEC doing different kinds of invasive species mapping, and he drove all the county roads, identified ash trees on them. We were able to then map where our kind of heaviest infestations were of ash trees and how many of those were tier 3, which is severely impacted ash trees. From his field work, we created a whole series of maps. I didn't print out the whole report for you guys, so I gave you the cover page, and I'll certainly send the full report to the legislature. But that's, this 2014 report has a whole series of maps that show just how bad and what the density is of the ash trees on different county roads. And then from that, we were able to come up with what's basically a work plan, and that's on the back side of the cover sheet, it should be. And this is our prioritization of county roads, if you see this one. So this is what we've been working from for the last, two seasons.
Wow.
And the other piece of paper is gotten to as far as tree removal. We've been primarily doing this, CPW's been doing this through a contract, outside contract for tree removal service. So in 2015, we were able to remove 480 trees, and that was for about $60,000. So they were the low bidder. We were able to reach 480 trees.
Once they, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Once they start turning like a brownish,
mm-hmm.
are they?
Oh, they're done from day one.
They're
all done unless you treat them with a chemical, which is expensive. There are certain kind of specimen trees, like on a campus or somebody's backyard that they might want to save.
So once they start turning, you want them gone.
Yes.
Oh, no. They're not good for 3 years or
no.
5 years.
And I think I think they're declining faster than we had expected.
They're by my house on a base to
yep.
see them in the last year.
And they call that blonding. Like
yeah.
this time of year, you can see that. So we've been out this spring. This is the list of roads. They actually were out today marking trees, and they're up around 400. This year, we've been doing GPS location of each marked tree and also DBH, diameter at breast height, because we have to change how we're working to produce the bid document, because we're going to have to bid it out by size class, because that's a lot of the contractors were complaining about that. So,
do they get ground up after? Is that
so? Anything that's done with the ash trees, the infected ash trees, has to be in compliance with New York State Ag and Markets. That's rule number one. And then from there, it's basically how to keep the cost down when we bid it out. So you are allowed to sell firewood within a certain quarantine zone. You can move the material and sell firewood within that zone. That's kind of changed over the last couple of years. So I believe the 2015 contractor was using some of it for wood, but some of the smaller stuff was getting chipped. Kind of on Ag and Markets has a guidance for, 2 inches by 1 inch by 1 inch for the chip. And it also has to be done at a certain season so that you're not in flight season, so you're not carrying.
So I know this is a very naive question, but they're ash borers. Is there an expectation they'll infect any other kind of tree? I mean,
That they'll eat all the ash and then they'll be onto something else.
Happen.
And they may not, that doesn't seem to be the case from the upper Midwest where they first were seen in the country. And if they do, they might not be as effective as killing. So it may not be quite as lethal to the
right.
tree. But I haven't heard of any reports of them not on.
It sounds like, and from what I've heard, both from what you're saying, the undertone of what you're saying, what I've heard out from members of the community, that there's a fatalistic kind of take on it now, which
right.
might be why we're allowing firewood to move within a quarantine zone, because there's
mm-hmm.
an expectation that every ash is going to die. What can we do for private citizens to help them to identify the tree, to plan for this happening, to know that when it does happen, it might become a danger to their homes, to their properties? I mean, we have tons of forests. I mean,
right.
look at how many trees on just these number
yep.
of roads. So I can't even imagine.
We've kind of been doing, that kind of gets into the outreach on two levels, which we've been supporting over the last couple of years. The first is that for 2 years we had a small grant each year from the, it's called, from the Catskill Center for Conservation and Development through, they have a REACHIP that's the office, the regional office sits up with the Catskill Center. And they funded the county to coordinate the county's Emerald Ash Borer Task. And that task force did support to people who were working in their municipalities to educate other folks. Also, the people from the Catskill Center were doing trainings in towns. I think that's kind of a lot of the public outreach that I've seen so far. And again, if you call Cornell Cooperative, the funding has moved to CCE to get funding from Cornell to now manage this task force. So they do that.
Which makes sense because they have all the links to the entomologist and the, like, you know, what CCE does is, like, that's who you call if you have, like, a question about, you know, like a tree and decline. A logical place for that to live. So,
yeah.
But we do get calls about it also, people who want to save their trees from all dead on the side of the road. This list for the county prioritization, if you get a lot of calls about a road that maybe is not on our list to look at for this year, I mean, certainly let us know. We went out and looked at Finneywater Road because we got an email that said, hey, you know, it's awful down here, and it was really bad. So this is not, the reason why it has this disclaimer on the bottom that it's not a, like, a work plan,
right,
is because it's not meant to be static forever. So if there's a place that's worse than another one, we would do that. Also, when we did this plan in 2014, we went to the UCAT, the Ulster County Highway Superintendent's meeting, have also reached out to towns through the CACs, done a couple of presentations to the Ulster County Transportation Council and also to the EMC to get that information back to the towns about what we're seeing. And really for the towns, because we have this map of county roads that kind of, you know, blankets the county, for them to be able to, like, kind of fill in the gaps and see where their towns are.
Marble Town here, my town, they've been wiping them out. I mean, they've done an amazing, up to my house, I'll come home and there'll be 30 trees on it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Is that the Central Hudson line?
No, these are towns.
Yeah.
These are, you know, because not all utility is in the way. I would assume it's town because of electric utility poles aren't always...
There's definitely there're hazards. We're marking ones that are particularly like road hazards.
Mm-hmm.
So they're on the side of the road, they're leaning in a direction that because the ash trees, when they die, they chunk. They kind of, like, they don't just kind of gracefully, like, shed down in, like, large, very hazardous sections. So we're doing the hazard trees along the side of the road. And generally, most people are, like, you know... They're pretty eager to have them taken down at this point. There's a woman who came up to our youth worker and said, you know, last year I wasn't really, you know, I didn't really want it down, but now I see it and I see it everywhere and I'm thankful to have the tree down.
Is it the picture on the cover? There's
mm-hmm.
a picture of the boars.
Yeah, I'll send
that
down.
Is that the only...
No, these are these are called this is like after you've taken the bark off the tree. They actually have the foresters have a special knife that they use to take the bark off, and these are the larvae galleries. But this is really what basically girdles the tree, so it prevents all the phloem in the middle, phloem's on the outside. It girdles the tree and kills it, and that's what makes it so fast. And then this pattern where that some of the bark comes off, they call blonding. So you can see that.
Sure.
Well, that's how you
notice
it. Not
right. Or the woodpeckers. You know, you can see that also. I'll pass this the other way. This is just a PowerPoint presentation that we put together on the plan. And there
the thing is they don't grow back that quick. So it's
right. And it's also really costly. Like, there's some figures in here for cities that had to implement big programs to go after their hazard trees, like Grand Rapids. Took down 10,000 trees, and they spent $600,000 so far, and they're figuring $7 million total just to deal with ash trees.
Will ash trees ever grow back again? I don't expect you to know.
It might. I don't know.
Yeah,
it is. And it's like the chestnut and the elm, and you're like, and now we're going to lose the ash. And it's especially in wetland areas, you know, it's a great native species, so it's...
I know there are a lot of the furniture and bat manufacturers in other parts of the state are just panicked.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's been a huge industry for them.
Can I say something? Yeah, I live on Mountain Road. That's 44. I got 4 acres. I got over 100 trees that are dead. I mean, I think it's coming down the mountain. Mm-hmm. Wherever you look through the woods, the trees are rotting out. It's going to start raining trees one of these days. Mm-hmm. If we come through get a storm with thousands upon thousands of trees that are dead, what we're going to do? I mean, I don't know what the
Central Hudson, they're only concerned about right. power lines. They're not going to go on somebody's property if there's no power lines.
No, I'm not saying that. But I mean, there are hundreds and thousands of trees on, you know, that will affect the power line. I don't know what they're doing.
Their crews are cutting in the right of way. I mean, they're doing a lot of it down where I live. Just that crazy tree cutting. Insane looking tree cutting of any kind of tree. But it's, to Tom's point, it doesn't prevent. I mean, a tree that's 60 feet tall has a 60 foot fall, so it could be 60 feet away, and they're not going 60 feet into property. They're just going. You know, basically 20 feet at maximum off the lines.
And one more thing, I heard from an insurance guy that if you have a dead tree on your property and it falls on your house, it's not a act of God. If it's an ash tree, it's an act of negligence.
It's an ash tree.
Yeah, because it's been dead. You know about it, okay. And you should have taken it down. So I mean, I don't know if the homeowners know that.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I mean, I've been. Talk about this for two and a half years. I mean, it's going to get dangerous, I think. I mean, you can't walk through the woods anymore. Well, there will be a point when you can't walk through the
woods. You have that many on your property.
Yeah. I only have 4 acres. But I'm on the road that has 118 trees that were marked to take down. And believe me, the last time that the town over right next to me, Hurley, they took down trees for like a month and a half. But they missed a lot, and now it's showing up again. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's hard to tell, you know, whether it's an ash or not.
And it's hard also even for the county when we think about, you know, what are we going to reach with the budget that's there for tree cutting? Okay, do you get the ones that are just really, really bad right now, or do you take down all the ash that are, you know, potentially hazard trees? Or do we want to get to another road where there's these tier 3 trees that are dead and, you know, ready to fall? Yeah. You know, it's
speaking for my own concern, I don't know what happens if I knock down a tree on the road. You know, do I need a license to, or just wear an orange shirt?
Mm-hmm.
I look like I'm waiting for a car.
Somebody stop traffic because you don't want one coming down the road.
Yeah, of course not. Right. I mean, is there a procedure to go through?
I don't think so. I would call it in just to...
I give Amanda a lot of credit for kind of sticking out of the box with regard to this. And for the last 2 years, we've submitted consolidated funding applications for a large-scale composting operation. And it's because we know that one of the major components of that is the wood chips for composting. And she had built this amazing plan. We're going to use all of the wood chips we're creating from all these ash trees to jumpstart the composting, but we can't get the state to buy into it.
Really?
It just doesn't.
Really?
Yeah.
Could you leave them? Oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. Could I know, like up in Massachusetts, in a transfer station where we are, when they take their trees down, they chip them. And they've got a big pile, and you can drive right up with your pickup truck, throw it in the back,
apparently,
and then drive it to your house and use it. They give it away.
Yeah, they do that in New Paltz, right?
They do the same thing,
but not ash.
Right.
It's supposed to be once it's chipped, because you're doing it not during flight season. You're taking the tree down not during flight season, and then you're chipping it to the prescribed dimensions.
So it
and it's supposed to be that they can't really survive that. But I don't know.
I thought it was a creative use of something, trying to make something positive out of a bad thing. And it would be organic compost would be such a major benefit to us shipping less waste out of the county.
Right.
And again, the state, we can't get them to buy into it. We've tried twice now.
Maybe try that. I have another idea. I'm not giving up on that. So.
I think the county has done a great job on this, and it's a bad situation. I don't know if there are any ash that are going to end up being somewhat resistant.
Right. That's
if so, then the hope is that the resistant trees will then become the new stock, and so we'll have a little better situation. So that's the good news.
Yep.
The bad news is the Catskill Mountain Keeper and Catskill Center have been talking to Chris, the Catskill Regional Invasive Species Program, about hemlock woolly adelgid. And the woolly adelgid is an aphid, and it kills hemlocks, as its name implies. It doesn't kill them quickly, and it may not infest all of them like the emerald ash borer, but about a third of the trees in the Catskills are hemlocks. So we're trying to jumpstart. We've created a task force, and actually we should be, we should have Amanda inside this. I think maybe we copied Aaron on the original, the first meeting was just a couple of weeks ago, to try to look at places where we might target some trees as sentinel trees and try to cut off the spread of the infestation, and as a long-range plan, very long-range, like 5 to 10 years, develop some biologic controls. Thought that previously cold winters were helpful in keeping the adelgid, seeing as effects of changing climate with areas that previously would have had it's creeping northward.
Is that coming like this did from western part of the state, or is it it's coming from the south?
They have it out on the west coast, and it started in New York State, I think, in the southern tier. It's very bad in Tennessee and the Appalachians. So it's but now it's coming up to our area, and it's been seen in the southern tier. They did a demonstration project out at Zor Forest and were able to contain it when they had to use insecticides that we normally don't like to see people using. So we'll just be finishing up with dealing with ash as we start to see real problems with HWA, hemlock woolly adelgid.
My question is, how much action on the local level really helps towards preventing the spread of these type of invasive species, especially when it comes to trees, because Ulster County is a hub for the passing through of a very large logging industry between other parts of the state and Canada. I drive it through every day, just constantly going right through Ulster County, logging trucks. So how much of it is preventative here, but how much can we prevent from outside sources, whether it's coming from, you know, more western parts of the state, down 28, or to get to the thruway, vice versa?
I know the, it's here and it's moving, as far as EAB is concerned, the bugs are moving it, but I know in general, when you think about how do humans aid the spread of this, because they think that this stuff might have first shown up in the upper Midwest off of pallet wood or shipping or stuff like that. But then it's really transport of firewood, not by big commercial operations, but more people moving firewood for camping. And so before it was detected here, and in the early stages, there was a lot of ag and markets in the DEC had a big campaign on don't move firewood, and they still have that. And they had a couple checkpoints one time. They were, the NCON had a checkpoint, going over the bridge, the Roncliffe Bridge, because people will, go to their camp, bring the firewood that they might have at their house, and bring it, and then leave whatever else behind that they don't burn. And so it's pretty strict at state campgrounds that you can't bring in wood that's from more than 50 or 100 miles from the site. And if you buy stuff locally, it either has to be kiln-dried or it has to be from that area. So DEC and Ag and Markets try to enforce that. But, the big industry must be able to carry something around.
Well, that's what's up, too, going to firewood. As you know, Woodstock, in that area, the amount of folks that I know that, especially, in terms of profession, and make extra money for their families.
Right, sure.
It's a business, delivering firewood.
And that's why it was good.
Per se, but.
Yep. There was a period of time when the restriction from ag and markets, as it read, was basically that you couldn't transport even infected wood within the quarantine zone. And
that was not long ago.
You're like, okay, now you can't sell wood. And if you sell wood, it better not be action. They actually busted somebody
in
Shokan.
Although they took his wood and the whole BS story afterwards. Yeah. Wood, and then he was not doing any, it turned out he wasn't doing anything wrong, and he chipped like 12 quarts of wood at his.
Oh my God.
It turned out he wasn't doing anything wrong because he said he asked all these questions and they couldn't answer them. Somebody just came in from the state and chipped it. And it wasn't ash, it ended up being a mess.
He asked the DEP, but the forestry gave him the fine. He was too opposing.
Is that what it was? He got out of trouble though, didn't he? He didn't end up getting
fined. It cost him a lot of money.
Yeah. Paying fines or higher wood?
Wood and fines.
Okay, that's what he got out of it.
He might have, just one thing though, Ingrid. They said that the board doesn't attack saplings. So therefore, you know, whatever is very young now will grow into ash. But you know, they'll be back again or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but it'll go into a normal cycle.
Gypsy moth.
Kill
moth.
Yeah. And I'm lucky, I guess, about 4 years ago to wipe down all the trees.
You have a
four-acre coming down the mountain.
Not good for you.
It's like you have a 4-acre field coming.
Yeah, I just like the kiss of death. I grew up, I had to take a bus this year.
The new soccer field's coming to a town near you, right there.
Port of Forest and
Park. Any other questions on this for Ken or Amanda?
Just one question. Is it going to be posted, like when roads are going to be done? So people can get ready? I mean, not yet, but eventually.
You'll hear the chainsaws at 6 in the morning.
I don't know.
There was a lot of fights over the firewood. They did early.
Okay, and that was the town. I would suspect that it's going to be, and that's where you want to make sure that whatever's all that wood is being disposed of or used in compliance with ag and markets. I'm a little more concerned if we just bolt it and leave it on the side of the road.
It's going to walk.
It's going to walk, and we're not going to know what happens to it.
It's not going to make any difference.
Well, it could if somebody takes it out of the region.
Yeah.
So right now, the people who are finished up the 2015...
Even if they take it out of the region, it's not going to help. They're saying all the trees in the United States that are aged are going to die.
But there's a quarantine zone, and you're not supposed to, as for ag and markets, you're not supposed to move it out of that quarantine zone.
Okay. So is the quarantine zone?
Right now, I don't know. I would have to look it up on the website.
Is all Ulster County in the quarantine?
Oh, yeah.
That's huge.
We're covered. So, but now at least, you know, if you... Olive, town of Olive by the park had this problem. Like, they wanted to take the trees down, but the guys who live a couple miles down the road couldn't take the wood home to burn because they couldn't move it. They had to take it down and stack it on the site until they changed the regs. So, but that's ash. Sorry. It's not good news. And it's just trying to deal with it as a yearly line in the budget in DPW and just make the money go as far as it can go. So that's pretty much the strategy right now.
You said we contract out, but do our DPW crews, I mean, do they have the capacity? Do we have trees?
We do have a tree crew also. We don't have an arborist. We have a tree crew. And, you know, there's a good bucket truck, a good chipper. We can chip up to 14-inch trees in diameter with our equipment, newer equipment. So there is some capacity there, but it's such a big job that they could be sent out to work full-time just on doing the ash, but they contract out for it.
And
just to handle...
You deal with utility lines, too, so it's pretty sensitive. It's not like just stopping the road and saying timber and drain off the road. I mean, you trim those trees and get them below the utility lines. And cut them. It's a labor-intensive process.
Yeah, very much so.
Thank you. You had something?
Sure. Share an update on vehicles and charging stations.
Yeah.
So the end of last year, I think we were to, what is this money, right?
In I don't think we've ever done a formal presentation to the committee on kind of what the plan was and, you know.
Can you sit with this?
Sure.
Yeah. And just to talk a little bit about kind of implementation of the Green Fleet policy so far, as well as kind of usage and some statistics, and also now that we have plug-in hybrid vehicles deployed in our fleet, how we're doing with those. So I have, I think I have 10 copies of this, which might just be right there. And you have one there. So we'll
need that one.
Since I'm around the other way, sure. So, last fall, I was asked to present on the Ulster County Green Fleet policy and our EV charging station initiative to New York State DC does a series of Climate Smart Communities webinars, and was able to kind of put together a presentation. Sometimes when you put together slides, they end up kind of really doing a good job of like getting your arms around what this is all about. So just passed around a copy of that presentation. So this is a statewide webinar where the county is being recognized, you know, as a real leader when it comes to both the Green Fleet local law that the legislature passed and also the EV charging station initiative. And what was important in this presentation, which the first couple pages go through, is that we have a county greenhouse gas inventory for our operations. And our fleet and our employee commutes are two really big, you know, so over the majority of greenhouse gas emissions are due to either our county fleet and our employee commutes. And then, you know, we have a kind of framework for thinking about how we're looking at energy conservation and renewables through county government, and we're really trying to right size and use efficient technology wherever we can. You know, that's the first thing is like you size it right, you eliminate the need to use the fuel first, and then you look for other means and renewable energies and RECs and things like that. So the fleet alone is 35% of our greenhouse gas emissions, and we've been tracking consumption, which is a big part also of the Green Fleet policy. And you know, there's also the Green Fleet policy looks at there's two levels of kind of charges through that policy. You know, the first is to kind of get a really good handle on what exactly is going on in our fleet and to right-size the fleet. And the other one is to help the deployment of renewable energy technology for transportation and efficient transportation through the community. So the EV charging station initiative is an example of a project that helps meet both of those goals. There have been a lot of EV siting studies that have been done. A couple years back, it was a pretty popular thing to do, and NYSERDA was funding some of them. They are they can be very expensive and kind of really logical as far as their recommendations. The city of Albany spent $90,000 doing a study of where their EV stations should be. And it pretty much came back that, like, parking garages, municipal centers, places where people do business are, like, you know, along with supporting the infrastructure are good places. So when given the opportunity to either just do more planning and thinking about things or using Charge New York funding to implement and install, we went down the let's install the infrastructure. Starting, let's see, it's page 5. I really like Venn diagrams. This is one of my favorite here. So this slide here, which shows a series of 1, 2, 3, 4 concentric circles, for me really encapsulates this program as far as the EV charging station. That you have the core of this program, which makes complete sense and can stand on its own as far as putting these charging stations in places where they will serve to serve our fleet and give us the flexibility to deploy different types of EV technology in different departments for different uses. That's kind of like the core of this. Also, the funding that we used, Charge New York funding that we used, was to support fleet infrastructure and workplace charging. That was a mandate of that grant pool. That grant allows the public to charge at charging stations when they're not being, you know, if there's not a conflict with the goals, which are workplace charging and fleet vehicle charging. So that core was our fleet vehicles. Like I said, we've deployed 4 into the fleet. The state is actually in the process of this summer. We'll be doing an aggregated buy for fleet vehicles. It's probably for Chevy Volts. And they're thinking they're going to get about 130 orders for vehicles through that, and they're going to get a really great price on the next fleet buy. So we're talking to them about how to participate in that aggregated buy. So that's for fleet. The next kind of circle is commuting employees. This says 97%, which it should say 97 instead of 94.
Are these commuting with county vehicles or personal?
These are personal. This is just people who work for the county.
We don't have a lot at this point. We have one, I think.
We have one.
Yeah.
Up on Golden Hill, who's now charging at work as a workplace charging. But again, you know, when you look at our greenhouse gas footprint for county government operations, we include employee commutes as that, and that's 22% of our total footprint has to do with employee commutes. So we did some outreach on this, and we were always very mindful to remind people that as an county employee, you can ride the bus. You're eligible for, I think it's a 25-cent or a 35-cent fare on the bus. We also worked with Metropool to set up a rideshare portal so that people can look for other county employees who might have similar kind of commuting habits to carpool. So it's about a lot of different ways to green your commute and not necessarily just workplace charging. You don't have to buy a new car to have a greener commute. You can carpool, and that's you're doubling your fuel efficiency right there. So, and then the next kind of sphere of influence of this program is local residents. The more people see charging station infrastructure and see those cars plugged in, the more they, oh, look at that. Oh, look, that's an EV. Look, oh, I wonder what that's all about. They talk to people. They learn more about it. And it demonstrates that technology to the public. And it's really important, you know, that in action. And it's also important to support those drivers because that's the air we breathe around here. And having those cars on the road with zero emissions is better for public health. Also, as far as transportation, when you look at Ulster County and our greenhouse gas emissions of all activity in Ulster County, it's 49% of our greenhouse gas emissions. So anything to promote green fleet and green technologies for and low emissions for transportation is important. And then kind of like the last level, which is kind of is this tourism and regional benefits. And this is about kind of putting Ulster County on the EV charging station map and having that buzz and getting those folks to then change what they might have done and come to Ulster County instead of going somewhere else. And this is great, and this is where this project works in tandem with, like, the Central Hudson Initiative, where now there's a way for businesses to kind of get in on this. If you have 2 hotels and you have people who drive EVs and they're checking out, you know, which hotel they want to go in, they're going to choose the one that has the EV charging. Same with, you know, EV owners, and NYSERDA has done studies on EV tourism. They're looking for places where there are clusters of charging stations. and it just, it becomes the destination.
This is a program that the county executive talked about a little bit in the state of the county. We haven't formally rolled it out yet, but what we did is we took, and I sort of did this tremendous report about this notion of EV tourism and trying to draw people up from the metropolitan area, and, you know, we knew it was beyond our ability to really do it, so we brought in Central Hudson, and we've been working with them, and their commitment to us that's not fully rolled out yet is to put a program in place where any one of their customers, any whether it's a regular business or a tourism property, they're going to be able to join the program, and Central Hudson's going to make the overriding investments. It's very expensive equipment. You know, like without grant help, they're about $10,000 a piece for the models we have. Again, and they're going to be able to provide that at a business for a very low cost, like $50 to $100 a month.
And we've talked to tourism available. About how do we kind of make a niche
out there.
Businesses?
Yeah.
Yes.
They'll be able to, as long as you're a Central Hudson customer, you can join the program. They'll come install it for you, and you'll be able to, for $50 or $100 a month, have this to attract customers.
And then that creates that density of charging stations, and then we do work with tourism, make sure we have a map out there, and say, hey, drive your EV to Ulster County. And it's kind of, there's, for me, and how we try to think about things as far as, supporting kind of some core principles as far as the projects that we work on, there's not too many projects that hit as many points as this project, so that you can, install the charging station infrastructure at your major county buildings. You're setting up the infrastructure in order to support your fleet, and to support your fleet in any, let's see if we can get some kind of electric van for the van that goes office to office to office. So having charging stations various places, it's all providing that kind of infrastructure. And then to have it available for workplace and then residence, and then it's kind of like a home run, because you're taking care of your own house and keeping that in order as far as the future goes, and then moving out.
You want to talk about the first four vehicles? We're kind of in a testing phase right now with the four we have. I know that, Joe, I've heard some criticism, you've got the one parked there all the time. We're kind of in this phase right now where we're trying to keep it plugged in and fully charged to really see what kind of mileage we can get. And
Are there any villages or towns that have it in Ulster County, charging stations that have invested in them?
Not that I'm aware, but several of the towns have come to us to help them basically do the same grant.
Sure. Yep.
Again, these are about $10,000 a piece. We were able to install them, and there's a local match to these, but we were able to use the in-kind. So our electrician did the final wiring and dug the trench. So our in-kind work paid for the.
Worsing is actually going ahead. They have their bids, they have the funding in line, and they're going to install one.
The college has them.
And we're seeking the funding for one out at the Catskill Interpretive Center.
Yeah, if I know Amanda's
home. More hotels now have them. And
I'm a question and then two suggestions. Frankly, my question is, where on campus is the?
There's one at the Extension Center at Strive at Sophie Finn. There's not one on the main campus here.
But we've tried to work with them.
We've already done the legwork to figure out where it would go. Where is the easiest place for it to go?
Just change of administration here might have slowed them down a little bit.
So as soon as the right opportunity comes through.
I would appreciate it if we could get a copy, electronically, for the Climate Smart.
I'll send you full page.
I do have a suggestion about the sedan that's parked at the county There are two marked spaces, and then two other spaces that, if they were vacant, you could reach over. Car could be parked in the third space, so that the marked spaces are available. 47 times last year by zip code. and this year, since the purchase of,
Ford Focus is.
Right.
Fusion.
About half the time, I don't. So I think... And then the other thing is, I don't know if it's charged or fully charged during the day. If we put the charger back, I think I, for one, feel uncomfortable because I don't know where it is in the cycle to just take it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can get that working.
Sure, I think, again, if you bear with us, again, we only had it for about a month or so, and we're going to look at it. That particular car is a pool vehicle used by several departments. We use it in our office sometimes. And, again, we're just trying to, we're figuring out the best way to do it, because one of the things that we're working on is to really make sure it's charged every time it's there, because we're trying to figure out what kind of mileage those cars are getting and what kind of, and actually, Amanda will talk about that, because we put the cars in different places for people that do different types of work and trying to understand if we make a major investment in these kind of cars, you know, does it work better for sanitarians or caseworkers or, you know, I guess, what is that about kind of what we've seen? It's been about a month and a half,
sure.
2 months.
Yep. It's been the second week in March that the vehicles were deployed. So there were two at the health department, one at the county office building, and one with Department of Social Services that the commissioner and then the investigations unit uses. And the more you use these cars for shorter trips that are purely electric, the better the mileage is going to be. So before I tell you these numbers, you know, we have some averages in the Green Fleet report for by department for 2015. And the absolute best we were doing by department was probably 24 miles to a gallon. So that's the newest cars, the Fusion, stuff like that.
24 miles.
Yes.
Yeah,
we have a very old fleet.
So,
you know.
And we ran, we got some fueling records. It's actually a little hard to do because they don't fuel up as much, so you have less data points. So, you know, these numbers are going to bounce a little bit.
I didn't interrupt. The one over at Social Services, they had it. Amanda kept calling over, like, you know, to give me the mileage when you gas up. It was almost a month and a half before they put a second tank gas in it.
So, and here's one because we had to run. So there's a non-plug-in hybrid that was bought for probation because they needed the police package, the ability to put a cage in it. So they bought a 2016 Chevy Impala that's been at probation. That car has been averaging 24.3 miles to a gallon. On a 2016, a larger car, but the car at DSS so far, 40.5 miles to a gallon. The car at the health department that the commissioner uses is at 44.8. The car at the county office building has gotten about 62 miles to a gallon.
That's a lot.
The sanitarians, 67.8.
Miles
to a gallon for the sanitarian. So they're utilizing it on the right kind of the shorter trips. Mm-hmm. And it's gone, you know, it's been over 1,100 miles out on the road. So compared to this chart, which is like the very best, it's like 20 odd miles to a gallon. You know, and that's across the whole department, which is a whole bunch of vehicles. It's a big improvement.
Okay, but with this opportunity for the bulk buy, and there's new state incentives that we can take advantage of that are in addition to the federal incentives. So we're really looking at, you know, what are the right investments as we look at the whole fleet, and we can try to understand how each department uses a car. Would it be effective there?
Yeah.
Not effective?
Yeah.
Well, it takes time to get the numbers.
Yeah.
Tracy, you've got a question?
Okay.
So two things. The bulk buy and the vehicles that you're looking at in the future, are they all electric? Are you looking at anything that's all electric?
So the bulk buy is for Chevy Bolt, which now gets 60-odd miles to a charge. And they do have an internal combustion engine as backup.
As backup, okay.
But, you know, that's pretty significant.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can get to Albany on that charge.
That's great.
I think that I think that would really really work. Yeah. I think it would really work without scaring people that they're going to run out of their battery. While they're
there's and also that's changing fast. I mean, the length of the distance on a charge in a lot of these vehicles,
yep.
And in affordable vehicles, and you know, the Prius hybrids, it's such a short amount, and now you have affordable vehicles that get 60 to 90 miles on a charge, much less the high end. The other thing I wanted to mention, just to keep your ear, but more importantly, Ken and the executive's ear, is please, please, please wrap these vehicles. I just think it's going to mean a lot to see, like, Ulster County green vehicle. Because people, when they see them at the station, they know they're electric, but they don't know they're the county's. And when they're out driving about, I just think it would mean a lot. It would fill me with pride,
yeah.
Seeing a vehicle that's at Ulster County, green vehicle, wrapped. I just think we have to own the accomplishment in a way that gets it out to the public at large. And we should be proud of it. We should be proud of this. We should be proud of this transition. And that's a way to let people just on the street as they're driving by know.
Yeah, again, that's a great idea. And it's something we've talked about a couple times, but again, it's just been a lot. And we're really trying to figure out, you know, one of the biggest challenges was to get all this infrastructure in place in a way that, again, was cost effective. And we're really happy we got that part done.
No, and
you
I know, am and, too. And that's
then,
what I'm saying. I just.
Yeah,
I'm,
and again, and, you know, and.
It's gonna,
And again, like I said, we moved quickly on it, and again, this is really our first opportunity to come to the full committee and kind of talk about this was the goal. Here's how we think we've accomplished it, and get past some of the the back and forth on it a little bit. Like man, a great point about to park there. We kind of have it parked there for a reason right now, but we're looking at do you move that, and how to make that better. And kind of just work through that. It's very early in the process.
Did this make it around the table?
Yeah.
Okay. This is the exact same format as we presented at the end of
November
to committee. So it's same thing, just again, starting when the program rolled out, which was in July, and we just bring it current as far as the number of sessions, energy use, et cetera. So far I haven't teased out on a graph. Graphically, we have about 100 charging sessions of this total number, 758, have been fleet vehicles, and also about 440 kilowatt hours, so a little less than 10% so far. But that's gonna, since those have only been deployed in the fleet since the beginning of March, that's gonna become more significant proportion.
One of the things that Amanda did when they were first deployed, these tester vehicles, if you will, she went and met with all the employees of the departments and taught them how to use them the most effective way that they could, how to make sure they're plugged in all the time. Just really trying to really understand the fuel efficiency and how to make it work.
And it was really interesting, too. Like, we did to the all-team meeting, presented to all-team meeting at the health department. And, folks are a little, there's some people who are more curious and some people who are a little bit more standoffish, and got really good feedback from a bunch of people there that, I was a little concerned at first, but I drove it, and wow, it drives great, it switches over from the, you don't even know what's going, that it's going from battery to the combustion engine, and I would think about maybe my next car, I would get a plug-in hybrid.
I drove one around the block just to see, and one, you don't know it's on, and it feels like you're driving a golf cart, right? And it's instant acceleration. It's a little different.
It's weird.
Yeah.
People walking don't know that you're coming.
No, that's what, and I have a slide there that's like, be very careful when you're pulling out of a driveway, when you're backing up. Like, there's only the tires are what gives you away as far as noise goes.
Yeah.
On it's part of the presentation. So this is the same kind of statistics as far as so greenhouse gases, energy, and total number of sessions. So you can see it kind of slows down through the winter. People tend to drive their electric vehicles less in the winter, so that makes a little bit of sense there. But again, we're seeing good usage. There's the cost, and that's total cumulative to date from July, cost per day, number of charging sessions, et cetera, et cetera. And average session length. I did take the fleet vehicles out of the data set to do the average session length and charging length because they will sit there with the plug-in and they were skewing it pretty substantially. Again, and this was this is the same chart that was presented last November where we broke it down by where folks are coming from as well as zip and number of sessions. So,
yeah,
no,
it's good.
No, but, and again, I took the chart, I took the fleet vehicles out of the what's in county versus out of county because that was really bad also.
Could you just repeat the numbers on the bulk value?
Sure. The from what I've midsummer, the state is going to be state's working with municipalities trying to do an aggregated buy on Chevy Volts. They're thinking they'll be the total number will be around like 150 vehicles.
Because I was curious because just in terms of within the county, if the county, because obviously you have goals going forward, you know, there are 20% of new purchases going forward, so the county is going to be continuously in the market. And Woodstock, before I became remember the legislature, I was part of the Environmental Commission where we did a big push for solar and homes. It was in businesses
with the bulk
and we did the solarized and we did the bulk buy for in the community and it was amazing how successful it was. Just going forward, do you guys have plans to maybe communicate with the municipalities, not necessarily going through the state if that program doesn't exist, but maybe if there's towns that are looking to buy green vehicles for their fleet, combining
talk to some folks about that, but we should just push that out to, you know, maybe even go to the supervisors meeting or something like that. To let them know about that. And also in the state budget, there's a bunch of, between last year's CFA and what NYSERDA put out, as far as they're actually going to be running a campaign for bulk buy, like a solarized, for the general public for EVs. So that's coming. And then there's money for municipalities for charging station infrastructure. And there's also a credit for buying EVs that municipalities are going to be eligible for. And that's going to go on top of, like, the bought-down prices for the bulk buy, and that's really going to bring the price of the vehicle.
So bring it down to what we would have paid for a regular gasoline car.
So it's going to bring it way down. Because right now there's a federal tax credit on the EVs, and if you purchase the vehicle as a municipality, you're not eligible for that. So they're kind of going to be able to give the through the state, the municipalities are going to be eligible for that. So we could, I have talked to several supervisors who I knew were interested, but we should just more broadly share that with folks. And I do believe the city of Kingston is in the process of buying a plug-in hybrid. So
one other question. I was curious if for police vehicles, because just in the first couple of months I've been here, we talk about buying police vehicles a lot, which makes sense. Is there certain standards when buying police vehicles that exclude, make it harder to incorporate? Because if you look at the percentages of, you know, of a fleet and what I'm assuming passenger cars, I'm just guessing that the majority of them
There's a couple factors. One is having physically a vehicle that can have a cage in it. And also have a police package, and then there's the peripherals, like all the other equipment that goes in the car. I'm seeing case studies now of different communities where they have worked like directly with Ford or other manufacturers on. There are many departments across the country that have used them for non-pursuit vehicles in their force.
Like traffic enforcement.
That's what Kingston's buying it for, is traffic enforcement. So that's totally doable. But then when it gets into, can we handle it with a pursuit vehicle? There's some municipalities have done it, and they've worked directly with the manufacturers in order to make sure that the peripherals can, you know, be plugged in and it's not going to cause a problem with anything.
Yeah, like,
so,
for example, we had to buy a new car for probation. It wouldn't have been appropriate to buy this model of plug-in hybrid and
right.
Music. So.
Right. There's, you know, there's a big, New York State signed on to these multi-state zero emissions standards. So that within 2 years, we have to have 30,000 to 40,000 zero-emission plug-in hybrid vehicles on the road. And by 2025, the number goes up to 600,000. So there is a big push to get these on the road. And then you see that if you, well, I see it because the number of models of plug-in hybrid or electric vehicles that are coming out, as well as the gains that are being made in the battery technology that allow the range to increase, which increases the desirability of people to buy these vehicles. And then state just passed a residential tax, residential rebate that goes on top of the, you can get a federal tax credit of up to $7,500 for buying an electric vehicle, and now the state's going on top of that with a rebate for up to $2,000. So now you're talking $9,500 off the sticker price of a car. So I think we're at a real critical point where we're going to really see those
the numbers
really jump. So,
tiny question. In this report, why the 43 unknown? Why are they unknown?
So if somebody doesn't have a ChargePoint card, and calls ChargePoint for them to unlock the station, or for an example, there's a ChargePoint card that sits with the guys in the parking booth at the county office building that they can use if somebody comes there and wants to charge but, you know, doesn't have a ChargePoint card, they undo it. So those are all captured in that. So that's kind of like the other category.
Do you have, in the case that, because we're not charging for the stations, in the case that you have the men in the booth run the cards, you have them just ask for voluntary information?
But we try to educate them, you know, here's how you can get your own card.
Yeah.
And yeah. But we had a gentleman who came to a meeting with the legislature last week who used it and was excited about it, and we hooked him up with the proper card, signed him up the next day. So.
Yeah.
No, that's great. But I mean, it wouldn't hurt probably to ask them to keep like a voluntary running list, just saying that we're trying to.
I mean, you're absolutely. I remember we're learning. I mean, this was meant for county fleet infrastructure, and then we're trying to figure out how we can then get all the side benefits of it. And
and that's how. I mean, you learn by doing.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
And, you know, there's electric vehicle stats as well as a lot of other information about the fleet in the Green Fleet Report, the 2015 Green Fleet Report. I did bring some extra hard copies with me. We spent a lot of time in the as many charging sessions as there are, you know, 750. There's 15,000 fueling records in a given year, plus 600 fueling records for DPW. So, this is a very data-intensive report. So, and I think it was the first time that this data has been put together like this. So if folks haven't had a chance to review this, I have some copies here. And
we did get an email.
I know it's getting late in the meeting, but do you want to hear 5 minutes on what we're doing with solar and kind of just updating where we are? Just, you know, as we know, we've talked about doing two large utility-scale projects. One of them is located here on the campus of the college. One of them is located on the former Town of Ulster landfill behind Frank's Hotel Boulevard. That one is in the, kind of the final approval stage right now. The planning director and will be in before the Ulster Town Board for final approvals on that this month.
Tomorrow.
So that's moving along. That'll be done, well, we think, by the end of third quarter, fully up and running. And
construction finished before the snow.
Is that electricity going to the grid then?
Yeah. It's remote net metering, so that means it goes into that circuit of the substation, which is Home Depot, Kohl's, ShopRite, you know, that section of the town of Ulster, and then it offsets.
It's about 27% of our electricity is that one. It's a huge. It's about 8 to 10 acres of solar panels in the final design. And then here at the college, We've been working, I think the change of administration's helped us a little bit. When we first came to the college, they were on board, but they didn't want any of the green space used. They wanted it all on roofs, right? But we know that some of the buildings, like the gym, you know, the roof isn't as structurally sound as we would like. We got a lot of work to do on that. So Dr. Roberts, we've been working closely with him, and we came up with a new list of site plans, and he wants it to be more of a seek-to-be-seen type of installation versus the former resident wanted it more hidden on the roof. So we basically put together a list for them to do a final priority of where they want them. I think we've locked in there'll be a main installation on the back entrance road coming into the college here, so that just below their leach fields, that'll be all solar there. There'll be a ring of, like a horseshoe of solar around this front garden here, front and center. There's a little field over in the back where, behind the historic house where they train dogs. That'll have a big insulation. And then one or two of the roofs of the newer building, and that'll be a fully sized system here. So it's just about 4 megawatts in total between
the projects. Is that here, or is it county?
It will offset this college.
It's
yeah, we actually.
It's going to help their budget more.
Yeah,
than
right. And the way that we had, there's choices when you structure the deals, and they chose a structure where they maintain a lower rate of electric buy for 20 years. Like they chose that model.
Yeah, it's just a flat rate for the 20 years. So it's a little higher than what we start out with at the landfill, but it remains flat.
Right, and we chose a model where we could, after 6 years, once the federal credits are exhausted, we could possibly buy and take over the whole facility and get all the benefit from it.
Right.
So.
There was a recent workshop that actually Mana helped. There was a recent workshop on solar PPAs for municipalities that you worked on. And there's the consultant that works for NYSERDA for the New York Sun program presented on, you know, kind of like, this is what a power purchase agreement for solar is, and talked about how they're involved with reviewing the contracts for different municipalities all across the state. And the woman who was giving the presentation put up a graph of the prices that they've seen. And, you know, they had it out over 20 years and what the starting price was, and then if there was an escalator, you know, what it would be at year 20. The price, the two projects that the county negotiated with Solar City were the best prices per kilowatt hour on that graph, period. Like, staggeringly so. So... there's, you know, it's good. It was like, oh, okay.
Right. Okay, you're going to be seeing a little taste of it in the paper over the next several weeks.
Yep.
But if you're interested, when we're further along, if you'd like to go out and see the site, we're going to take you up to the landfill. It's actually, I think, probably one of the most beautiful views in all of Ulster County on top of that landfill, believe it or not. It's amazing what it looks like. And, but there's a lot of work. Amanda's done a great job working with DEC, and because obviously we want to make sure we don't pierce the cap of the landfill anyway. And
right.
We've been really doing kind of the what are the best practices and requiring moving that along. So, it can, you know, toward the end of summer, more if the committee is interested, we'd love to arrange something and bring it up there. You know,
and we'll go there and have a meeting.
Or something, yeah. So.
That would be great.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Tracy and I were talking, can we maybe do this quarterly?
Sure.
Once every 3 or 4, you don't have to come every
yeah.
week. Just to give us the EMC, just different words.
Yeah, again, we'd prefer to, you know, kind of lay it out and make sure the committee is informed. I think,
yeah,
you know,
it's really
even on the car thing, I mean, like I said, everyone kind of took of it what they wanted, and we never had a chance to say, here's the plan.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah, no, this is great.
Yeah.
Any other questions before we go into it? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. No problem. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, so we'll move on to the resolutions.
Or if you're talking to me, then I'll take it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to talk about the EMC?
He said the Lexus with the county, and I said, "Pretty old confiscated drug car that the sheriff's office had."
I mentioned to him. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to move on then. Is that all right? We're going to go to resolution 265, which is confirming the appointment of a member to the Environmental Management Council.
I'll move it.
It's Jim Mays from the town of Olive. Legislator Bartel moved it.
Second.
Legislator Hefner, second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Two ayes, three ayes. Are opposed? Carried. 5-0. Okay. The next legislature resolution is authorizing the Commissioner of Finance to accept the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation's offer to purchase a parcel of county-owned real estate property in the town of Sophus and authorizing the chairman of the county legislation to convey such parcel. Everybody got their booklet?
I'll second.
Got it, moved it. Legislator Bortello second. Actually, is this in everybody's packet or just the address? Okay. When we sign it, we pass it around. It's basically a 100-something acre piece of property, 120 acres, in a swampy area that's surrounded by open space and PVC property. So we should hopefully maybe have some boating or trails.
Being purchased for $100,000.
Okay, so we have a motion, a second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 5-0. All right. Let's do new old business first. Legislative Green, you want to give us a climate smart thing?
Let's see. For Climate Smart, there was a meeting amongst the municipalities that are already working to develop solar. It was coordinated with the Association of Town Supervisors and Mayors. And they also talked about the benefits of collaboration for municipal street lighting. And then the end of March, early April, there were three different events relating to large-scale solar. One was put on by our planning board right here at the community college. There were 150 people that came out from planning boards and zoning boards, elected officials, and interested others to learn about there's a universal code for zoning. I'm not saying that right, but the state is recommending sort of a model zoning for solar that you can fill in the blanks and so the interest is high. And then we hosted, along with Cornell Cooperative Extension and others, a workshop on solar leases, scaling up solar, exercising caution with solar leases. And again, the worst night, the winteriest night of the year, and we had 100 people at the gate and 50 people that couldn't make it because of the weather. A lot of farmers and other large landowners talking about exercising caution with these large-scale solar leases to be sure that we're not stripping property owners of their rights and transferring all the property rights to the developer needs to be balanced so that it's mutually beneficial. And also, we don't want to be on farmland. If there are rocky outcrops or appropriate places, plus we have a lot of flat roofs and landfills and brownfield sites and so forth. So, and then that next weekend, Mulholland Consultations held another one called Beyond Rooftop. And again, filled. I think they had somewhere between 80 and 100 people. And this tended to be large landowners, land trusts, and nonprofits. Learning about the various options for large-scale solar. So I like to think that, you know, 10 years ago, it was a big deal if you put up a 10 or 50, some of the test systems. Now we're talking 4 megawatts, 10 megawatt, you know, 20 megawatt systems. And what's happening is that the solar developers, often not from this area, are looking at this really open space, and they're looking on Google Earth and identifying the parcels that are 20 acres or more and offering leases of $1,000 to $2,000 per acre per year. And for a struggling farmer, that's a real temptation. So we just want to be sure that these leases get a proper reading by an attorney so that was a big deal. And then I think, you know, there's been a lot of focus on that and also this process that's going on of reforming the energy vision for New York and all the different spin-offs and sub-proceedings and public hearings that are going on. But I will say that New York State has done a great thing in, I think they call them the New York Sun PV trainers. And there are people that are trained, that NYSERDA has contracted with and trained to help municipalities understand this very active, rapid transition that we're going through. And they seem very competent from PACE and other subcontractors. So I think that's pretty much it. I can't think of anything else yet.
Were there any handouts that you have from any of those events?
I'm sorry, Tracy.
Were there any handouts from any of those events?
You know, I should have thought to bring them up. I'll bring them tomorrow and put them in the office. The handout, the main handout, was a redacted copy of the Cypress Creek lease. So you could read for yourself. How, you know, they took the person's name and the address off, but you could see for yourself how unfair a base lease this is. They did send someone from Cypress Creek, and she said, listen, we're willing to negotiate, and they wanted to set up a meeting actually this week with some of the key people that had organized the event. But there wasn't a lot of interest in meeting with them, so I don't know if that'll be rescheduled in the future or not. I mean, I do think it's always good to talk things through, but I have also become aware that there are many leases that are not so, you know, excuse the word, but I think it's accurate, predatory. Leases that really balance the values that each property has, the ecological values, the agricultural values, the scenic view values, with the need for open space to capture solar energy. So I think it's an interesting process. And what's most interesting to me is for 20 years we've been talking about this, and it's always been 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road. It's happening now, and it's happening so fast that the challenge is to be sure that it's done well and right the first time. And so I think, you know, we're going to try to create a resource library. And I think there was a PowerPoint that I can also circulate.
That would be great. Thank you.
We're going to try to... I think the Citizens for Local Power is going to host a website because I don't know how to do it through the county, and it may just be easier to post the stuff there.
Thank you.
You want to trace it up?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
no, old business. You want to talk about
I can speak briefly about that. And Man, I can speak to it too. So the solid waste... Disposal Improvement Commission. We got a three-month, so we're out of August, but we meet on Wednesday, and we split up, I don't know how much I've talked about this before, but we split up sections of the report, and individually members of the commission are authoring sections of the report, so now we're at the point where we're putting the whole report together in draft form so that all the members of the commission can look at the report as a whole and start to provide feedback and make recommendations, which is the most critical part of the report, which is the we're moving along, and we expect now to be on. We've had some change in membership, but the new members are active, which is great. So there's not a lot of specifics to report on it, but it's around the corner. The legislature is going to have the report around the corner. And we talked about doing, which I think is in the plan, some public in sessions, which might be with the RRA or F County building. So we're just to put the report out to get feedback from the public before we give it to the legislature.
Okay, new business?
So new business. Mary and I were invited by Dave Haldeman. Am I pronouncing it correctly? From the EMC. He's the representative from Shango. He was given our names by the chair of the legislature. I think he invited Ken, and Ken suggested he invite both of us. And so the EMC had a retreat at Omega Institute this past weekend, and Mary and I went to their opening session. We went out for dinner with them. There was a, they have a buffet. I've been to Omega before for a retreat. It's a pretty special place. And then we had a working session, which I think was really great. A lot of what we gave an update about what's happening or what has happened in the legislature on the environmental front, and we had a give and take about the relationship between the EMC and the legislature, and I think more specifically to encapsulate it, over the past couple of years about the lack of a relationship between the EMC and the legislature. There's definitely a willingness. I said that I would reach out to you, which I did over the phone, but in advance of even speaking to Rich, I said that I was sure that this committee would welcome EMC representatives to come to committee meetings as often as they thought appropriate. I mean, everybody's pressed because it's volunteer. Everybody's pressed to have time for meetings, but I think, and I also represented that in my earliest days with Rich on the Environment Committee, EMC representation was at committee meetings every month. So there was definitely more of a give and take, which I think we're ready to both benefit from. I mean, speaking for ourselves, Mary and I acknowledged that in the process of the crafting the polystyrene foam ban and reaching out for support, we totally overlooked even reaching out. It's been a logical place to go to get support from, like-minded, active citizens who all have communities to go back to. So I'm going to put you, Rich, in touch with Dave about coordinating that. And they also said that as an either-or, they'd also welcome representation from this committee, which would be the logical place to come from this committee, to their meetings. Probably we don't need a duplication of both. And they mentioned that Manna, who's not on this committee, but as a member of the legislature, has come to their meeting.
They meet here.
They do meet here.
Yeah.
And Amanda can speak to it too. Amanda was at the meeting, but because Amanda attends their meetings and communicates with them, they have a through line to the executive and the executive department and the Department of the Environment, which is logical. But I think it's past time. I mean, I think we're ready for this kind of communication, and it can only serve to help all of us, both the legislature and the EMC. And on that, I did say I'd come back to this committee there. Amanda, I don't know if you brought it, but we were going to get, we will get a list of EMC membership that's lacking. This has kind of been an ongoing, people have heard about, yeah.
Every board is hard.
To just, I committed that we would circulate it to the legislature as a whole, so those members of the legislature that don't have representation, but do have ECCs or CACs,
sure.
Or interested people that could be at-large members that we could reach out to fill the vacancies and diversify if there are holes from different communities. And one other thing that I just wanted to report is that
one of the many items we talked about, and just I think this is an example, is the plastic bag ban or the potential plastic bag ban. And a member from, which I told Rich as well, a member from the, he's not an EMC member, but a CAC member, right, from Marbletown, reached out to me about discussing the history of the plastic bag or lack thereof, which kind of began from Woodstock, actually, and members of Woodstock pushing to the legislature going back many years. But what I think is interesting now is we have New Paltz that's in, the village of New Paltz has enacted a ban, and now you have Marbletown that's interested, and just at that meeting, City of Kingston said, we are also interested, but we're waiting on the county to a certain degree because it doesn't make sense to do this in a piecemeal manner. And I'm not saying that the time is now, but I am kind of putting it out there because this is the committee where we should have the discussion. Yeah. And with EMC, if there are multiple communities across this county that are ready to seriously have the discussion,
it's a logical place. Could have a real effect because people would just go to Lake Katrine and say, I'm not going to, there's only one supermarket in Kingston, the City of Kingston.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it could have a really negative effect if they're on a different playing field
than everyone else.
Stores who are 2 miles away from them.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed in New Paltz that it's, you know, sporadic. You know, you go to Rite Aid and it's a plastic bag.
Oh, really?
If you question it, they'll say, well, we're not in the village. But that's not true. We're not in the village. Rite Aid's
not in the village.
But it's right in the center. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's right
in
the village.
It's not technically in the village.
I don't know how that's
like
possible.
Even the Salvation Army. Even the Salvation Army, like, has paper bags now. And we'll ask you, do you want a bag? They try to discourage you before you even take the paper bag.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, solar, there's starting to be a shift, you know, a shift. And also, just for myself as a member of the Solid Waste Commission, having gone to visit all these sites, it's a repeat. Plastic bags are a repeat issue in terms of problems. The waste-to-compost facility is their single, not their, their two biggest problems in terms of running that facility are plastic bags and fabrics. So on top of just the functional aspect, then you have the plastic bags and trees, the fact that they're single use. I mean, the Texas sized island in the ocean made of plastic. I mean, it goes on and on. And so I've always been a supporter of trying to figure out how to do it. But I bring it up only because I was heartened to hear. It's almost like hearing it from constituents, not my constituents, but hearing it from members of communities across the county looking to us to say, is there a way we can at least have this conversation?
I think it's a good conversation to have in the committee.
And it's just one example of how I think that we can partner with EMC. I mean, the charge from the charter is that the EMC shall advise the legislature and the executive.
That's the state, isn't it? EMC is state. You know, aren't there rules set up by the state?
In the charter,
right, defines it.
Set our definitions. So. So it was really, it was great, and I got a lot, you know, I got emails from multiple members who attended of the EMC just, you know, thanking us as members of the legislature for attending, and I was really asked, but more happy to actually have attended. It was very worthwhile.
Good meeting.
Yeah.
And it felt like it could be a really good give and take and good resource for both.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Bernie bumper stickers.
Yeah.
Feel burn over there.
He was like, vegan and like burning. Yeah, that was one of the interesting things that several of the members of the EMC were very not so pleasantly surprised to find out that the meal was vegetarian at most open, but vegan. It was vegan line, and one member said, I'm not eating vegan, and I said, well, this is the vegetarian line. Like, I knew it was going to be like this. But the food is great. The
well,
it's
so delicious, their food.
Yeah.
I was like, Tom, just 10 years ago, Gary Bishop tried the plastic bag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, and before that, too, he tried it even longer than 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's worthy, I mean, my just personal...
At this
it's just changing people's habits.
Yep.
And now they ask you plastic or paper. You know, they don't even try to railroad the plastic down your throat. You can take the paper bags.
And at the time that Gary was pushing it, there were less, some of the challenges that we came up against were legal, and now there's precedent in giant communities across the country, but even within our own county. So there are ways to do it. It's a question of, is there the will, and then different approaches. So I think we should, at least, this is the place to have the conversation. I think we should reach out to the
EMC. Any other new business?
I don't know if you want to talk.
I think we should.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about
it? You can go ahead.
The Public Service Commission is, and Jonathan can talk about it more, but they're accepting comments. And we're in a kind of timeline. There's going to be a public hearing in Kingston. Is the public hearing in Kingston? In Kingston on May 26th. And then the deadline is June 6th, I want to say, for public comment. So we're obviously within the window. It would be, there would be a late resolution. But what the issue is, nuclear subsidies, taking nuclear subsidies out of the clean energy standards. And so I'd like to distribute, Jonathan and I would like to distribute information to the committee and the legislature as a whole. What I propose is that we would draft a letter to have legislators sign on to within the timeline of the public comment period. Because it'd be, while they do accept late comments, it would be preferable to have comments in on time, and I think it's something we wanna weigh in on. I certainly wanna weigh in on, and have any colleague who is in agreement to be able to have the opportunity to weigh in. Potentially, if we could get together a resolution that could have broad support, we could either bring it up, if the committee were open to it, we could bring it up as a late this
for next
month.
Week.
Yep, for
I mean,
next
it's
week.
Gotta be, but would it meet one of the two criteria, or three criteria?
We've had past, the county has passed memorializing resolutions.
As a late
Pilgrim Pipeline.
No, we've done, just also to point out, we've done a memorializing resolution on Indian Point that did pass, but it's technically there is a, you know, a lifeline of memorializing resolutions until, so we are up for that. And, I mean, we could also, now, if we can't get it in this, you know, it's something we'd like, I would personally at least like to definitely
get the letter
in this month and
have
it available to be signed, preferably at when we're in session, but then push for actually a resolution just to give this body and other members a little bit more time in June if we feel that's necessary.
I think it's also going to be a little bit on us. If we can get a draft of something together in time that it could be even considered late, there is precedent in the body. And I want to say it was also, we did a late resolution comments to the Public Service Commission. Manuel, can you refresh my memory what that was? It was definitely
this year?
No, it was. I want to say it was last year or the year before. We submitted. On what?
Was it on the red?
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you say June 6th or 26th?
6th. May 26th is the hearing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I want to say the deadline is June 6th.
So it'll be before the June meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah.
The same process as when we submitted earlier this year, the Pilgrim Pipeline, in regards to the Thruway Authority being the
lead agency
on that.
Yep.
It's that same process.
So it would be available.
For that, it's just up to the individual legislator whether they want to sign or not a resolution.
You know,
everyone will have
And we'll see if we can get a resolution together in time that makes sense, but we'll definitely have a letter with the ability to sign in.
We'll do that. I mean,
But not to get too deep into it, I do want to have the Indian Point discussion again, but this is separate because this is not strictly or even specifically about Indian Point.
So are you going to get the letter in the next couple of days?
Yes.
Let all the legislators stand and say,
yes.
Session night, if you're interested, we'd like to sign it. So you're not, we're not just handing it to them that night.
Yes.
They don't read and sign it.
Oh, no, ideally emailed out.
Right.
First, if you would like to sign it, please see the staff.
Right. It'll be just like, you know.
Yeah,
we're just going to try to distill it to be as simple a letter as possible, so it's not totally.
Yeah.
You know, we can provide supporting material to the letter if people want to do their own research and read. I mean the white paper from the commission is 50 pages long. Most people aren't going to want to read through 50 pages, so we can make the letter, I think.
But this is the recent news coverage too of some of the timeline that has gotten us to this point, just in recent months, that led to the reversal, and the governor's office has put out a lot of material on it as well.
Could I be added to the list to receive the materials we're going around? I'd love to see.
Do you have the email?
Absolutely.
Okay. Anybody else want to get on this? Tom, are you on this? Do you want to get the materials? No. Next week we have a resolution named after you coming. The Tom Cadgett resolution.
Oh, I heard about that one.
No. All right, any other new business?
Every 15 years I come over to
you. You're brilliant, Maya. Best resolution I've heard ever since I've been here. Best idea. Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Sorry I was late.
It was great having
I'll
move to adjourn.
Yep, move to adjourn. Leslie, the last second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Nana.
And it is 8:50.
Yes.